And here we are getting ready for the holidays.
getting all ready. Are you you're appropriately in a dark black room for today's show. Is that on purpose?
For the horrible holidays, yes. I gave myself a black background. I think it looks like I'm just floating in space, doesn't it?
It does. Is that something that I can do too, or only you can do that?
You can do this if you get a black moving blanket.
Oh, I thought this was a digital effect that you have.
No, this is an actual black moving blanket hanging behind me.
I like it. I like it better than the blue one.
It's actually the same blanket. I just turned it around. So you want me to use the black side? Go over to the dark side.
Go to the dark side. Yeah. Go to the dark side. Yeah.
Okay.
It's mysterious.
I'm going to the dark side. It seems appropriate for the beginning of horrible holidays. Our protest of the enforced joy of the coming season.
Why do you have to be joyful? I mean, I understand it's probably a good idea, but it's not a mandate.
No, it doesn't work for me. I don't like if you tell me go be happy, be jolly. Mm. I want to say, you know, go away.
Go jump in a lake.
Go jump in a lake, a frozen lake. I like to be happy because I'm happy, not because somebody told me you should be happy now.
I think you should stick up for yourself this way.
Yeah.
You should. Snowmensch.
Snowmensch. Yes. Snowmensch. This is a t-shirt that my good buddy, Bruce Glassman designed, and it says Snowmensch. And I'll show you the whole thing. If you see what's happening is the snowman has taken his carrot and he's giving it to a bunny.
Oh.
Eating his carrot nose to a rabbit.
It's a bit like a Cronenberg movie.
It is. And then you turn the rabbit into a stew. A rabbit stew.
This is the grand scheme of the Snowmensch.
Yes. Yeah. He's got a plot. So how are you? How was your week?
My week was good. Chilled out after Thanksgiving.
There was a special day, I think, wasn't there?
There was an international holiday. Yes,
my birthday. Day of the Tony.
The day of the Tony.
Yeah.
I enjoyed my birthday. That was really a pleasant time. Went to a great restaurant.
Yeah, you sent me some photographs that made me very angry.
Amelia took me to. I'll do a little plug. They're not paying me. I'm just going to tell you, if you're in Brooklyn and you get a chance to go to this restaurant, Lilia, maybe do that. Maybe go there.
Well, I'm going to do that the next time I come visit you.
Highly recommend it. We had a little private yurt. You know, they have these little, you know, yurts for four people, a little four top inside.
We've walked by this restaurant.
Yeah.
On our sojourns.
Yeah, they're totally enclosed. They have heaters in them. So it was cold out, but we were fine. And it was great. It was great. Really good food. I mean, exceptionally good food. It's like a long wait to get in there. That's how good the food is. They just don't let you in.
Yeah. Well, the photos you sent me some good food porn last night.
I did.
Was quite jealous.
It's not normally what I do, but this was special, so I thought I'd do that. So it was great. I had a little break, and it was fun. How about yourself?
Quiet week. Thanksgiving with my buddy Bruce and his family.
Mm-hmm. I hear there was a lot of food as per
there
usual.
There was a lot of food. It was very traditional. Bruce went to the French Culinary Institute and makes amazing stuff. But for Thanksgiving, his wife, Tracy, likes to have the traditional Thanksgiving. So it's the one time of the year that you can go to Bruce's house and get amazing food, but not, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this. You're getting the classics, but prepared just exceptionally well.
It's not like turkey confit wrapped in brie phyllo and all that.
No. Yeah. But it was spectacular nonetheless. And other than that, the week was getting ready for, we had our first big investor pitch on Monday night for our booze for batch 22. And that went very well. We learned a lot. We had a friendly a friendly crowd there, not the big investors that were prepping for, but people who could give us feedback and help us get ready for those big events.
Right.
And then the semester is winding down at school.
Mm-hmm.
Had a fun day yesterday in one of my classes. I showed one of my classes People Soup.
Oh my God, that's so great.
They got to see their professor in his first acting role at eight years old. So
I mean, honestly, you hadn't seen it in a little while.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you've gotten to be a better actor since then? Have you improved?
No, I don't think I've ever done better work than that.
That's a great movie. For people who don't know and they're listening, what is People Soup?
People Soup is a short film that our father wrote and directed in 1968. I think we shot it. He wrote it. And it's just my older brother, Adam, who also happens to be an actor. He's done some work here and there.
Yeah, I think I know who he is.
That's
yeah.
Okay. And it was the two of us in our first professional acting roles together, playing these amazing characters named Matthew and Adam. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun little short film, and it was nominated for Best Short Subject in 1970.
An Academy Award,
I think is what they call them.
So yeah. The first thing that you see, if I'm gonna just make a bid here to be your publicist for a second and say that you could have led this all differently and said that the first acting job I ever had was it was a project that was nominated for Academy Award. Just a movie about with two people in it, and I was in every scene.
Yeah, it was a two-hander.
Yeah.
It was a two-hander, and it was I should have led with that.
Yeah.
You're right. And not mentioned that it was 53 years ago.
where can somebody see People Soup?
You know, I'm not sure. I should put it up on my web. I should put a link up on my website. I should load it up to my website, and then people could go. I'll do that. I'll load it up to my website, and I'll put a link on the Arkin Brothers Talk About Movies website, which we have, arkinbros.com. I could put it up there and people could go watch People Soup.
I think you should do that right now. I think we should stop the show.
Until I get a takedown order from Columbia Pictures will tell me to take it down.
Well, they have to, here's my feeling. These big conglomerates need to make the film available before they start making you take it down. I mean, you wouldn't bother putting it up there if it was available.
If it was available, I would not put it up there. Yes, you're right. So I'll do that. And, and cease and desist letters be damned.
It could only mean that our show is doing well enough to garner the attention of lawyers. Right. Which might be good news. I don't know.
That would be great for us.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful. If they're suing you to stop you, you must be doing something right. Yeah. So, the holidays are upon us.
I haven't accepted that personally yet. I have not. I mean, I enjoyed Thanksgiving. I need a break. I need more than like 3.5 weeks between before Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's not working out for me. I'm just saying.
I understand.
I need another couple weeks, so maybe we can spread this out.
Well, I think we're doing our part by choosing the movies we're choosing.
Okay, I agree. We this was all on purpose. We're doing the wrong thing in the right way.
Yeah.
We hope.
So we decided to start the holiday, start off our holiday cheer with Black Christmas from 1974.
Not either of the remakes.
No, the original Black Christmas.
The original Black Christmas.
With, Margot Kidder, Olivia Hussey, Keir DeLay. Post 2001.
After 2001. Keir DeLay.
Yeah.
James Saxon. John Saxon.
John Saxon. And pre SCTV Andrea Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Post Romeo and Juliet, Olivia Hussey. And Marion Waldman plays Shelley Winters. She plays Mrs. Mack.
It is an incredibly Shelley-esque performance, isn't it?
Why isn't Shelley Winters truly in this movie? But do you want to give us the rundown on the plot of this movie, such as it is? It's not a complicated plot.
No, it's not. Black Christmas is an ensemble piece that centers around the goings on at a sorority house over Christmas break. While a lot of people have already left to go home, there's a few kids that don't really, their parents are on trips or they don't have anywhere to go for the holiday, so they're kind of stuck there, or they're leaving late.
Yeah. Are you actually shooting the movie right now? Are you in the movie right now? Because a cat meowing plays it's a big plot point in this movie, the meowing cat.
I apologize.
It's okay. I thought you were doing an homage.
Well, I'm not making that noise. I hope it's clear.
I thought it was that dinner you had last night.
Yeah, that's Harpo. And Harpo was named Harpo initially because he, I'll take him. Here you go, buddy. I know. Oh, you probably just wanted to hang out. So Harpo was named Harpo originally because he didn't say a damn thing. He was silent.
Right.
And
now you should change his name to Groucho because you can't shut him up.
He can't shut up. He will not stop. And he's great, but he has a lot to say. And he's old. He's older now. He doesn't look it. But he's an older gentleman, and they get cranky, and they want things, and they hear things, and they talk. So I apologize. There's nothing I can do about it. He runs this whole joint, and
I think it's great.
You know,
I think it's great. This is a homegrown show. We're not. We don't pretend to be.
We're not in studios and produced. We're not fancy here at Arkham Bros. So where were we? Yeah. So anyway, it's a Christmas break at a sorority house. In a very wintry, they're trying to make it seem like it's somewhere in New Hampshire, I think, but it's clearly Toronto, outside Toronto. Excuse me, buddy. This won't do. We're doing a show and you are not, qualified to be on a show. I don't know how else to put it. I don't want to be rude, but you're not trained for this. You don't have an agent. This is not a place for you. Okay, thank you. So we're on this Christmas break, and there are about five girls there and a woman who kind of takes care of the house and looks after them. The house mother, I guess she's called.
Yes, the house mother.
And they start getting some obscene phone calls. Some very obscene phone calls.
Really obscene.
Super, super obscene. Yeah. Surprisingly, like, disgustingly obscene.
Things I'm not going to say on the air.
Things that they actually don't say in movies today, and I'm surprised they let them do it then.
Yeah.
They get obscene phone calls, and there's also a some drama starting between Olivia Hussey and her boyfriend, because she is she's pregnant and doesn't want to keep the baby, and he is very upset about that. So yeah, there's things going on, and then
she's a hussy.
There may be somebody, we don't know who, is killing people in the house upstairs. This is a slasher movie. This is like this is the granddaddy original of originals right here. Yeah. This is where
a
it all started.
A slasher movie before they really figured out that slasher movies need to have slashing in them.
Yeah, well, that was on purpose. They didn't put it in on purpose, but this was the movie that inspired the movie Halloween. John Carpenter's Halloween would never have happened if it weren't for this, because not only was it a simple setup with the very few locations and cheap to do and made a big splash, but it centered around a holiday, and it was also the creator of this movie's idea. Halloween was actually Bob Clark's idea. So many connections.
Yes.
Had you ever seen Black Christmas? What's your relationship to this movie and to Bob Clark?
Didn't see it. Never heard of it.
You sound grumpy, and we're gonna get past this. We're gonna get through it. In fact, what do you know about Bob Clark?
I believe his given name was Robert Clark, and people started calling him Bob at some point, and that's what he went with.
Okay. That's a true story. I don't think that story's broke yet until now, but it's true, and you heard it here.
I think his name is Robert Clark.
And
that's the extent of what I know. And he wrote and directed this movie. I know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
You'd never seen it, and no. You saw it today. When did you see it?
Yes, I saw it today.
This is in the afternoon. In the warm, sunny climates of California, probably having a drink. Cool breeze coming in. Completely wrong vibe to watch this movie under. I don't condone it.
I think it's safe to say that I could have watched this movie high at 3 o'clock in the morning, alone in a haunted house, and it wouldn't have frightened me.
Oh, wow. That's really too bad. I was hoping we'd have a little end of the still before our break and kind of like come together.
We'd be friends before the break.
I thought we'd come together on it.
No, it's we're gonna go on our little hiatus. It's only a 1 week hiatus, but we may be going on the hiatus with a cliffhanger. Will they come back together? Will they be friends again someday?
It might be a really long hiatus. Okay, so this is really cool because you probably don't know this. This is arguably my favorite horror movie of all time. And I think it works like a charm. So I'm surprised that it didn't scare you. I'm very surprised.
Yeah, no, it didn't. It didn't scare me. It didn't make me, it didn't give me the thrills in the other way either. It didn't land for me at all.
Let's talk about something. I think we really honestly should talk about something other than movies. I just think that we should come up with a plan.
Why? You think this show only works if we agree? If we think, oh, you were like, how interesting is that going to
be? No, I don't. I don't know where to go. I don't even know where to go because my love for this movie is a genuine thing. This isn't like me being ironic. I think this is a masterpiece.
Okay.
A complete masterpiece. I've seen it. I see it every year. I mean, I think it's like as good as this genre ever got.
And I still love you like a brother.
Wow. Do you know how many, you don't know. See, what's interesting is that you're willing to go out there and do the lack of research that you did on this movie because you don't know who Bob Clark is.
Right.
And come out with something that is going to be extremely unpopular with people. Like your feelings about this, I don't think you realize how unpopular your position on it is.
I'm okay with that. Well, let me back up a little. There are a lot of things that I see in this movie that I see that I'm aware, oh, that was the beginning of this thing happening, right? I see that this is the genesis of other things, but I don't feel like they're well executed and done in an entertaining way in this movie.
Okay.
They didn't entertain me.
Okay.
And it's not like nobody made a scary movie before this. You know, there were scary movies before this. Hitchcock made some scary movies before. You know, there were a lot of
scary take it
movies.
Easy, Grandpa. Watch it. I mean, we're already back in the 70s. I didn't think we're going to go all the way back, but go ahead.
Take it easy, Grandpa?
No, I mean, listen, yes.
I mean, Psycho
I think,
wasn't...
I think you're being incredibly hard on what is... I'm gonna say you are as wrong as you've ever been tonight. You're as wrong
well,
as you've
my,
ever,
friend Kathy
ever been.
Glynn, my friend Kathy Glynn, who may be watching the show, would say, your opinions are never wrong. They're just your opinions. Okay. You think she's wrong.
Well, she hasn't come on this show yet. I mean, there wouldn't be a lot of interesting dialogue about movies if that were the position that everybody took.
Okay. All right. So explain to me why this is an entertaining, fantastic movie.
I can't. I mean, I really honestly can't. I don't know what you'd find creepy or scary or unnerving if you didn't find this movie. If you don't find this movie creepy, I don't think we really have anything in common as human beings, or certainly in terms of horror movies at all. I wouldn't even know what to ask you about what you like. What movie do you find actually scary? That's because I'd like to find out, get a temperature read on horror for Matthew to find out, like, you know, what you legitimately have respect for.
Oh, okay. I had to turn off and still haven't watched the rest of it because I need somebody to come sit with me and hold my hand. The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Okay. Yeah, that's a scary movie. I don't think it's as scary as this movie, but I think it's scary.
Okay. What else scares me? Was it Mother? Is that the name of the movie, Mother?
I don't know which one you saw, but there are many of them named Mother.
the one, isn't it Guillermo del Toro? Did he do?
No.
Who did the most recent horror movie called Mother with the kids floating in the room where you see the kids' feet go by in the room as the kid is laughing and the kid's in the air?
Mother. I don't know.
I'm gonna Google.
You're gonna have
it.
To look that up. Yeah. Okay. Are you talking about Hereditary?
No. Or maybe it was. Was it Mama?
There's a movie called Mama. There's a movie called Good Night, Mommy. There's many films called Mother. There's many of them. And then many of them people float around, so I don't even know where to begin.
things are going so bad.
They're going sideways. Yeah, so yeah, okay, so great. So I was so excited to talk about this movie with you. And now I'm scared of where to go. I don't know what to do. It didn't work on any level. You're upset.
And, I'm not upset. I'm actually.
Oh, I'm happy. Upset. I'm sorry. I was the one who was upset. So, you like a movie with floating feet, and you liked you like something else. And the Autopsy of Jane Doe. Okay.
The Autopsy and Halloween, right? Halloween, which came from this. I felt did this better, scared me more.
Okay. I'm a huge Halloween nut. I love that movie. I've come to think that Black Christmas is a better made film. I've come to think Black Christmas is actually a weirder, darker trip with a lot more going on in it than Halloween
has. Well, let's go
to
the stuff that I did like. Why don't we go to the stuff that I did like, and maybe you can bring me from the stuff that I did like to a greater appreciation of this movie. Because it didn't make me angry like last week's movie did. I don't need to be calmed down. I just didn't enjoy it. I didn't sit there watching and saying, oh, God, they screwed that up or they messed that up.
I gotcha. You just didn't enjoy it. You didn't enjoy a really great movie, which is your prerogative.
Yeah. So what I thought was interesting is that unlike the sort of moral ethos that is given to us in Halloween, in this movie, it's the professional virgin who is the first one to die. Where usually in this genre, it's there's somewhat of a moral component to, oh, you're the slutty girl, you're gonna die. And it's the girl who is the, you know, in Halloween, Jamie Lee Curtis is the one who doesn't have a boyfriend and doesn't, right? So I thought that was interesting. I took note of that. But then when I watched that and I see that, I wonder to myself, well, did they just, you know, write this and that happened to be, or was that a conscious choice that was saying something?
It was conscious choice. I mean, okay. if you had bothered to look into who directed it,
well,
you might have come across some interviews with him that where he discussed a little bit of where the movie came from. Yeah, it's possible,
but the movie has to stand on its own.
You know, completely.
As I tell my students all the time, you don't get to sit down with the audience and explain things to them.
He didn't need to.
Because I didn't see what I didn't walk out of the movie saying, these are the people who got murdered and these are the people who didn't. People who made these moral choices survived. These people who made these moral choices did not survive.
I think what one of the things that I mean, this whole conversation started after Black Christmas got made. There was no final girl concept before Black Christmas. There was no idea that a sorority house bunch of teens would have to end with only the virgin surviving. That whole concept came after Black Christmas was made. So it's kind of outside that conversation in the sense that it established a lot of things that slasher movies ended up doing, but it's not really a slasher movie because you don't see anybody. There's really no gore in it. There aren't any atrocious murders that you see happen on screen at all. There's very little blood. And it relies on suspense. And like you said, I didn't mean to make fun of you, but like Hitchcockian suspense as its driving force, which makes it really different than a lot of slasher movies and really stand apart from them, which is one of the things I appreciate about it. But it was really before anybody had established any of those rules. So I don't know if the team was thinking in terms of who lives, who survives on that level of scorekeeping that happened later.
Okay.
But I think it's, you know, what's interesting, and it is very flipped. You're right. I mean, this movie has, you know, at its center, our heroine in this movie is a girl who's gotten pregnant and who doesn't want to keep the baby, which is happening on Christmas, which to me layered in a lot of thematic stuff that is missing from other movies of its type. Anyway, sorry. So anyway, I hope that answered something.
Okay. Let me see what else I'm looking at, trying to find the things that I liked. the vocalizations that Nick Mancuso was able to do with the phone calls, for some of which he actually stood upside down on his head to put pressure on his larynx to get his voice to sound that way, was a callback for me to a movie that hadn't been made yet, a movie that wasn't made till the following year, Trilogy of Terror. It had a little bit of that Zuni warrior vocal quality to some of the stuff in the phone call. And that creeped me out a little bit. I could see where they were going with that, and I liked that.
Yeah, Mancuso did, I thought, a great job. Those phone calls and those prank calls, I think, really work. I think they're super chilling. And I think there's things about him about those recordings that are really subliminal and really terrifying that you don't think of at first. The main one being that they really do sound like different people. And they're also overlapping at some times, which is really, really scary.
Yeah. So, what else did I like? The scene with the cop who's been shot in the ass with a shotgun for trespassing, who is, for some inexplicable reason, brought to the police station rather than to the emergency room. And he takes his pants down in the police station and shows his bleeding moon to the room. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I like the police station stuff. I love it.
The police station has my favorite performance in it. John Rutter as the laughing detective.
He's great.
He's just spectacular.
I love those scenes. I think they have a great chemistry in that precinct. Yeah. And I love Doug McGrath, who plays Sergeant Nash, and
who comes from the big-eyed school of acting.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
he does. So, there's a small list of things you liked. That's for sure.
I'm looking. Oh, I liked the very unhappy carolers. Those were the most unhappy carolers you have ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, they looked cold and bored.
Sad.
Yeah.
Who did not want to be there. Caroling.
No, but what kid does? I mean, I don't remember wanting to go caroling.
Okay. The fur coat also.
That Handel wears?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my favorite character in the movie.
Okay. Throwing some shade. Great. Throwing some shade at a classic. Throwing the shade.
I just don't understand why it's a classic. I understand how it started something, but I didn't feel like anything was well executed or well written.
Okay. That's, I mean, we're completely divergent. I don't even know. I don't know really what to say, because I think it's exceptionally well written. I love the performances in it. I think the ensemble's great. I think it does things with camera that is some of the most memorable stuff I've seen in a horror movie. It's got some of my favorite shots ever in any horror movies.
Okay. Shots that I really like. Couple of shots that let's talk about that, because I'd like to hear more about that. I thought that the POV shot going through the window with the hands going through that narrow window, and you see the hands grabbing the window before the camera goes through it, and then the camera goes through the window and you see the hands again, and I thought that was really well executed and very interesting, because this is clearly before CGI or anything like that. So they really had to figure out how to do that. Because camera went through that window, but the actor couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, they were doing some things to pull apart the set probably to do that. But that was the DP just climbing up he built a rig to do that. He built it himself to attach it to the side of his head so he could like bend backwards and show you the top of the building and then go forwards. He actually could climb the trellis and climb through windows and stuff with it. So anytime you see the hands of the killer or any of it, it's the DP's hands. Yeah.
But you know, I'm willing to be educated, so go ahead.
No, I don't want to educate you. I can't educate you about it. You have an education.
You've given up on me.
I don't know what to say, because this is like, I don't know, because it's like to me it's such an exemplary version of what it is. I just think it's, you know, it's not just, and I know I like original stuff, the stuff that started things off, and it's not just that. I think that this movie has an enormous amount of artistry in it. I think it has it does a couple of things that I think are essential for my favorite flavor of horror movie. Mm-hmm. and that is, you know, and you're going to laugh because if you, you know, you're essentially saying you think it's really poorly directed. And my issue is that I think it's extremely well directed, like down to shot by shot, moment to moment. I think it's one of the best edited horror movies I could ever name. I never get sick of seeing it. I think that what it does thematically is so, for me, it's deeply disturbing on a level. It's not scary like, you know, monster horror movie scary of today. It's really more psychological and a slow burn. And I really love the way that it's paced and how they modulate the scares and the moves they make to, you know, to present a killer in this movie that is basically like an just completely unstoppable force. There's you know, they talk a lot about how in Halloween, of which I'm also a giant fan, I love Halloween, but when I saw Black Christmas, it really changed my views. Like, I was really surprised that Black Christmas didn't have as big a reputation. I think it's truly artful, you know? And I think that there's like the idea that this is happening at Christmas, and the first images we see, when we hear Silent Night, Holy Night, we hear that Christmas carol, we see this old house.
Right.
And the first thing that happens is we are in the point of view, the audience is immediately in the point of view of a deranged killer who creeps around the house, classic kind of like stalker slasher movie stuff. But I love the way that's shot.
Well, and they do a nice thing before they put us in the killer POV, is they do a stable camera shot of the through the window, where the camera is not in a killer POV. It's stable, and we hear Silent Night, and we see the people inside, and we get this sense of warmth and holiday. And then we shift to the shaky POV cam after that still shot.
Mm-hmm.
And we're so that the POV changes. And at the top, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, what he does with the POV throughout is really interesting and really thought through. But other than the POV and the point of view, what I was struck by was this is like Santa Claus imagery and the story of the birth of Jesus Christ and the killer, who is far more deranged and freaky than we even know. I mean, to me, this is one of the all-time great horror movie villains, particularly because we don't really ever see the guy.
Or learn anything about him.
Exactly.
He's not caught at the end. He's still out there.
Exactly. And so he takes on this kind of supernatural vibe, even though it's not a supernatural horror movie. And he goes to the upstairs in the attic. So thematically, right away, I just feel like I'm in really scary, weird, murky territory. We're working on like the themes of like inverting Christmas so that the Santa imagery of the guy climbing up into the house, which would be Santa usually coming down into the chimney and coming down into the house, is in fact the last person you'd ever want to meet. And then that also kind of juxtaposed with the, you know, Christ being born and singing about that in Silent Night, Holy Night, that then he takes nests up there in the attic through the whole movie and is this presence upstairs, up above them, like God looking down. And I just think like...
And the first one he kills is the Virgin.
Yeah. And playing with that weird motif, that weird thing, I mean, not to get too, you know, deep dish about it, but this is like that Yeats poem. To me, it's like the Second Coming. To me, it's like this weird, kind of terrifying, injection of this religious paranoia and stuff into this typical horror movie setting. And I think what it says about, you know, the men and how these women are really, I love the movie too because the women are all very kind of empowered, but they're empowered to be screw ups too. You know, I mean, like Margot Kidder is clearly has a drinking problem, and she's kind of a troublemaker.
And was drunk while they were shooting some of those scenes.
Was she? I'm not surprised.
And I don't mean to imply that she was a drunk. I mean, I think it was a thing they did, was like have a few drinks and do this. You know, I think it was.
Okay. And I like all these women. I think they're real characters. I think they're real people with interesting problems, and not they're like they don't, you know, they don't take a shower, they don't have a shower scene, they don't do any of the normal, typical kind of misogynistic moves in this movie. And I really came to appreciate all these individual, unique women, and really didn't want them to die, which is, I think, what elevates this movie beyond a normal slasher movie. Because even in Halloween, I don't really care about anybody but Laurie Strode. Her friends can die in that movie, and I really don't care about them. In fact, one of them I'm rather happy to see go. But none of these girls really don't deserve this, and I feel that's one of the things I love about the movie. It doesn't make that easy, and it's not cheapening their victimhood for our pleasure, because I think it has deeper things on it on its mind than just sorority girl scares. I think having an abortion-themed movie around Christmas time and have that be pushed so forward in the plot is daring and fascinating and creepy all unto itself. And I admire that about it a lot.
I agree with everything you've said, and yet I still just feel like the it was poorly executed. The acting, you know,
Okay. I mean, I don't. I feel.
the scenes between Olivia Hussey and Keir Dullea, I felt were just, you know, I thought the dialogue was in uninteresting. I thought the relationship dynamic was uninteresting. I didn't buy any of
I don't know what movie you just saw. I have no idea what you just
it.
saw.
All
I
right,
really don't
cool.
know because we're literally like completely crossing here. I simply don't know, because if you think this is a like badly made, I think what it sounds to me like is you're just kind of hating on the low budget part of it.
No,
And
I've
you
seen
know.
low budget movies that have performances that I think are spectacular. It's not a budget thing. It's you can have wonderful
I know I
dialogue in a low budget movie.
okay.
You can have wonderful performances in a low budget movie. I'm not talking about camera angles and lighting and production values. I'm talking about pacing and a performance that I believe in, a relationship
Okay.
that I
Okay.
believe to some extent.
I think that you are intolerant of certain stylistic choices in acting in films, because I think this is a style, and the style works, and it works as an ensemble, and everybody's in the same movie and doing the same thing, and you don't like it when it gets surreal. That's your thing, and that's fine. I don't have those rules, man. It can be anything. But I'm kind of kidding, but I just I am sh I'm a little surprised that you feel that way about the performances. I think that the work is really good in this movie. I think it's above, way above the average of what you'd get in almost any similar horror movie of its time, or of the kind of horror movie it is. I think Keir Dullea is really, really creepy in it and really interesting. I think that Olivia Hussey and all the women are good in it. I mean, and I even go for the caretaker mom in it, because I feel like I get what they're doing. I feel like they're making this kind of weird, interesting souffle of stuff, and I think she's great. So I just disagree 100%. I totally disagree. I don't think it's a bad script. I think it's a great script. I think it's a daring script. I think it's bold. I think we don't like movies that don't wrap things up, and this dared to not wrap things up and capitalize on some of the truly, truly like deep horror notes and chords that just a lot of movies don't even bother to have in them.
Wow.
So I am just, we're completely different planets.
Can we talk, can we find anything fun about it to agree on?
I don't know. That's completely up to you. You're the one who didn't have fun. So I had fun. I could talk about any sequence in this and have fun. I just don't.
Okay. I did love the getting killed with the unicorn sequence.
Yeah, it's incredible.
That I liked. But then we get to things like the search party nutsos showing up at the door. And that feels like it's from a completely different, like I kept feeling like we're in this movie. Oh, wait a second. Now we're in this movie.
Okay. Can I ask you a question?
No, okay. We can't have a conversation.
Well, to me, that's no different than a movie than a filmmaker that I've heard you praise for the same thing. So Bong Joon-ho can do that. Like they do that in, it's very like Korean films are very famous for that. Constantly shifting tones. Sometimes we get some comedy right. stuff. Sometimes we get light stuff. That's not philosophically a problem for you because you do no. like movies that do that. You just don't think this movie did it well.
Did it well, right? Okay. That's what it. Because you're right. I do love it when that happens in movies.
Okay.
And I've taken the position that you're taking sometimes with other people who say they kept changing the tone, and I always say, but life has different tones. You know, it has. Two things going on at once. Lines that I did love. I think one of my favorite moments in the entire movie was the phone call with McGrath when he says very slowly and bored, "Well, miss, we're very busy here. There's been a child murdered in the park tonight." Like that cracked me up.
That was good.
That was fantastic. Darling, you can't rape a townie. I thought that was pretty dangerous ground.
That's a really, I mean, the fact that Margot Kidder says it, it saves it a little bit from being.
Yeah, but.
But it's an amazing line.
It's also, you know, taps into something in, you know, because I went off to college not that long after this movie, 1978. I was a freshman in college in a small college town like this, you know? And there was that thing of the college students and the townies. And there was no mixing whatsoever. So that line really shocked me. But I understood where it came from. That looking down on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I didn't understand, for instance, how the first victim, her boyfriend with the coat, there were things that I just didn't get, like, how is he on a first name basis with the cops and the detective? Like they're old pals.
'Cause he's a jerk. That's what I took from it. He gets their names and then he starts acting like he doesn't do anything, but he starts glad-handing himself.
He shows up at the police station and they all know they know each other already.
Saxon doesn't know who he is. I think he knows the beat cop from patrolling around schools, what I got. But Saxon doesn't know who he is, but he acts like he's in with the cops because he's a dude. That's another thing I like about the movie, actually, is how subtly, in a similar way to like Silence of the Lambs, it's kind of a cool.
That movie scared me.
Well, it should have. So should this have? I like that there's a kind of a sly takedown of the patriarchy in this too, which I kind of like in the sense that all the men in this are either potentially lethal and you know, from psychotically bad news to to not going to help you. See, none of the cops are actually effective in helping any of these girls at all. Saxon seems to want to do his good job, but he doesn't, and he ends up actually doing nothing. And the cops are anywhere from buffoonish to, you know, just not helpful. The father figure in it is a weak and puritanical man who doesn't understand his daughter, but has no recourse to get her back at all. The boyfriend hockey player who comes in to try to act like a hero has nothing to offer except his fur coat, which is there, I think, to underline and emphasize the point that he's also a bit of a monster in his own way. The first time we see him, he's got the hockey mask on, which is like this animal mask. I think that was on purpose. I think it's underlining things about male culture on campus, how these girls aren't really believed. I really respond to that part of it. I think that's really cool without being too literal minded about it, which is something I really appreciate. It's not preachy about any of this stuff. But it layers in this stuff in a really, to me, a very creative way. And I think that, you know, I think there's some really, you know, you said it's, you know, I know it's not all about camera moves and stuff, but sometimes it is all about camera moves and decor and lighting and costumes and the way those things are arranged. It depends on the filmmaker.
Where do you fall on things like Margot Kidder giving wine to the kid when they're supposed to be doing this event for the kids, but they don't want to be doing the event for the kids, and they're swearing in front of them?
Yeah.
They're saying shit and fuck in front of them and giving them wine. Yeah.
What's my take on it?
Yeah.
What was your take on it? Why do you think it's there?
I didn't understand it. I thought along with a lot of the other writing, I felt like this is lazy writing and it's trying to be witty and funny by breaking some rules. But I didn't like, are we supposed to like these sorority girls? Are they supposed to be the heroes in any way? Because that didn't make them. That didn't make them heroes to me in any way.
I thought they weren't heroes or not. I thought they were. I mean, I think Olivia Hussey's a hero. I think the rest of them are flawed people with problems and different issues, right. and they're who they are. I mean, it has that kind of Robert Altman quality to it, which I appreciated. I felt like it's kind of this big shaggy mess with them all in this sorority together, but it felt real and it felt like all of them were buried into their characters. I have a philosophy of my own that I think I know. For me, I know why it's there, and those moments are there because to me, this is reinforcing the inversion of Christmas. Not that this is kind of like why they're all gonna die. You know, there's a way to look at it through this kind of puritanical lens of the psychopath, or of Keir DeLay, for instance, or of, you know, the virgin girl's father who comes there.
James Edmund, though, who gives, I love his performance.
He's great in it. He's great. I lost my thread. I was going to say something so supportive of the movie, clearly.
Well, you've said many supportive things. Let me to something that did scare me, an image that scared me and that will stick with me, is when they keep coming back to Lynn Griffin's dead body in with her head wrapped in that plastic bag, and she's clearly inhaled part of the plastic bag into her mouth, and that kind of terrified me a little bit, that coming back to that image over and over again. Interestingly, she was a swimmer, Lynn Griffin, and credited her time as a swimmer with being able to do that shot with the bag sucked into her mouth and hold her breath for that long.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
That bothered me.
She looks super dead, man. She looks really dead. Yeah, it's also, did you catch the, like, the, you know, the references to Wait Until Dark in there?
No.
Well, that I mean, just that plastic sheeting alone is a nice reference to Wait Until Dark.
Yeah, okay.
And the score as well. But all right, when he's hot, okay, go ahead.
Silly moment. Give me your favorite silly moment.
My favorite silly moment. The only part of the movie that I laugh at every time, and I honestly, it's a good natured laugh because I don't know how else they're going to do it. But the other thing this movie does kind of first is, you know, the calls are coming from inside the house.
Right.
All right. Which, yeah. Got to give it props. First time that happened.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's a moment where the cops come kind of midway through the movie to check out these prank calls and to tap the phone, and they put a phone tap on. And there's a moment where they have to establish for the audience, of course, that there's another phone line so that we understand how the killer's doing it.
Right.
But they don't want to spend any time on it because they don't want you to keep thinking about that because they want it to be a surprise. So just the way that John Saxon goes, oh, yeah, there's another line, but it's upstairs and nobody uses it. He, like, brushes by that plot hole. Or it's not a hole, but it's, like, what they don't want you to look at as the audience. Yeah. They brush by it really fast. That goofy moment always makes me laugh.
Yeah, it's in Mrs. Mack's room, but nobody ever used it. Yeah.
I have a soft spot for Mrs. Mack, and I find her, you know, like, covering up the naked people on the poster of the peace sign. I thought that was funny, you know?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
My favorite silly moment is her look when she discovers the first dead body, when she discovers Claire dead. And she has look right before she gets killed with the hook.
That's a good one.
Which was pretty good.
Yeah. I like the, you know, the, when Margot Kidder gives the desk sergeant the new prefix for the phone number. That's a great scene.
Yes, the fellatio.
That's very funny. I like the goofy parts, like Margot Kidder getting that kid drunk and whatever. I really do think that those things are in there to show us as kind of a reason why they're all gonna die. Like, this is how they're spending Christmas. This is what Santa is a guy having kids on his lap and talking about sex and cursing and being disgusting. You know, there's a Christmas party with kids and Margot Kidder's getting a 6-year-old drunk. This is all, like, kind of, to me, like, and including, of course, also in this other really kind of subversive way, the fear of, you know, being punished for needing to get an abortion, or the psychology of, like, this is her, you know, her fear of this event taking shape. I just bought it thematically, and it feels like less like goofy moments than just characters who are themselves drunk or funny or ridiculous and catching them doing stuff. But I didn't feel like I always had to think what they were doing was funny, particularly, if that makes any sense.
All right, pairings. What would you pair this movie with?
Well, let's see. I would do a double feature.
I have four ideas. They're all very different.
Please tell me how you would double bill this.
Well, the most obvious one is with White Christmas.
Okay, that would be great.
And Black Christmas.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting evening. Another obvious pairing is Halloween, to show how that grew out of this. But then there's also Bedknobs and Broomsticks, I thought would be a good one to watch with this.
Okay. Because I'm a fan of that idea.
Angela Lansbury and Marion Waldman, I think, would be fun to watch.
Yeah.
In next to each other.
Who's going
to
get big? Who can take this bigger than the other person? Yeah.
And then the fourth one I actually just came up with during the show, because you kept talking about the ensemble. So I would like to see this next to The Big Chill.
This is a better movie than Big Chill. Like, straight up, much, much better movie than The Big Chill. on every level. And I mean, Lawrence Kasdan's great, but come on.
Well, I'm not going to argue that with you, but okay. There are people who will argue that with you.
They're dead wrong. They know nothing about cinema at all. I hear what you're saying, but you're completely wrong.
Well,
in the immortal words of Film Spotting.
The Big Chill, arguably Kevin Costner's best performance. Seriously.
Making friends wherever we go.
No, I'm making, he knows, he's watching the show and he knows I'm kidding him. I'm ribbing
You were just about to play a cowboy in his next movie. Not anymore.
Because they needed a 61-year-old Jewish cowboy in his next movie.
My suggestion for double bill would be to see this film, and then maybe have some maple syrup pancakes, something from the great frozen north, some kind of cuisine from the north, and then watch a movie called The Silent Partner with Elliot Gould, which is another Christmas time based Toronto thriller slasher movie from the 70s that you would also probably hate because it's apparently just not. Is it Toronto movies you don't like? I'm trying to figure out what
no,
it is.
No, I loved. I saw. I saw Silent Witness. With
Silent
with
Partner.
Silent Partner, with Dad, and it was. That was. I had a really hard time. That movie scared me more than I need to be scared.
Are we going to do a run of scary movies this month? Because we should rethink this. I don't want you to be scared.
No, I like being scared. Like being scared. This movie just didn't scare me. But Silent Partner terrified me. And I thought it was a brilliant plot.
Okay. Well, I think
like
it's
Silent Partner.
I do. That's why I'm pairing it up. I love Silent Partner.
Okay. So there's a horror movie we agree on something.
Yeah.
Maybe
I mean,
you'll still like
this. This is better. I mean, Black Christmas is a much better movie than Silent Partner.
And the movie I was talking about earlier that scared me was Mama.
Okay.
Which was Andre Muschietti, a Argentinian.
Yeah, is that the one where the kids, the twins?
Yes.
And their mom comes back from surgery?
No, it's the they were discovered out in the woods or something, or they were raised in the woods for a long time and then rescued. And how did they survive?
Oh.
How did they survive out in the woods?
Oh, okay. This is a Jessica Chastain, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not that scary, but I get you.
That movie
scared you?
Scared me. Yeah.
Well, you never can tell what's going to scare somebody. You really can't. You really don't, and you can't.
You can't. Well, you know, maybe I'll be more scared by, or either more scared or have more fun with our next movie.
Silent Night, Deadly Night? You know, who knows what you're going to think. I don't know this movie very well. So
1984, Silent Night, Deadly Night is our next movie, but it's not until the 15th.
We're taking a little bit of a hiatus.
A hiatus. We've both been working too hard, and we need a break.
Well, we did a Thanksgiving show. Like, most people took a break for Thanksgiving. We kept working. We did it.
We're taking a break next week, and we'll be back on the 15th with Silent Night, Deadly Night. And hopefully we'll like each other more than we did tonight.
I hope so. I don't know.
It's a chance for me maybe to regain the respect of my brother.
I'm so sad, but I'll get over it.
He doesn't like me anymore.
I just was, you know, it's not that. I was just, I'm like a little puppy dog who was just kicked to the curb by his older brother going, that isn't a good movie. You picked it, but I am not entertained by it at all, and it's bad.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
This is why people tune in to see this kind of...
You know what? There are movies that I enjoy that you loathe.
Hmm.
And the difference is that when I enjoy a movie and you loathe it, you're generally right and my position is indefensible. Because, like, I can't sit here and defend that I enjoy watching 27 Dresses.
But you should. You should defend it.
I should defend that?
Well, I think that what that's, you know, to me, that would be what the talking, that's the whole thing to talk about, is that you're not going, look, it's bad, but I like it.
Yeah.
If you like it, it needs to be good, well, and you need to be able to say.
We have talked about this. There's formula that I really love, and you hate formula.
Not all the time. I mean, I mean, I understand what you mean by that. I often don't feel that people do anything interesting with formula. So if you're going to do formula, please make it your own somehow. Don't just give me a perfectly machined version of a formula. I can drink Pepsi. I don't need to have that when I go to the movies.
See, and there's times where I really enjoy, like, that perfectly machined formula.
Yeah, that's not exactly my first
like
choice.
I watch Law and Order, and I love watching how the pieces fall into place, even though I know it's in, you know, there's, yeah, see, you're shaking your head.
It's anti-movie. That's like anti-movies.
You're
it's literally
of me now.
It's literally
you are
anti
it's of me now.
Literally anti-movies, but
yeah,
I don't, okay. You know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
You're talking to the guy who's, I'm on, I think, season 11 of Silent Witness, which is a British forensic pathology police procedural.
Yes.
You would kill yourself before you made it through season one.
It's possible. It's likely.
And I sit there like sucking my thumb watching that stuff.
Mm. Just stimulated visually beyond belief at the visual storytelling on display.
No, not at all. Not at all. But watching, to me, it's like, you know, there are people who love doing jigsaw puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing creative about doing a jigsaw puzzle.
Agreed.
Right? That's what watching these shows is like for me. I love watching how are the pieces going to fit together this time.
That's a different reason for me than I do go to things to see. Yes.
Yeah.
So yes.
Okay. All right. Well, to be continued.
We're going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Christmas rabbit hole.
I suspect I'm going to like Silent Night, Deadly Night more.
It doesn't matter to me anymore. You can like or dislike anything. I'm not going to invest or recommend any of my favorite movies ever again. So I will sit back and watch whatever.
Hey,
but
come
I won't
on, man.
Care.
There are movies like, you know, we've had a good time with, like, Blast of Silence. Come on.
Yeah, because it's great. And you saw how great it was. It's great.
Yeah. So I'm not a complete Philip Stein.
No, just in terms of, you know, this is, it's clarifying to me what you like and don't like. It's starting to become clearer what it is, what things you find unacceptable in your movies, what just is like a fly in your soup and just like, no.
Okay.
And I, our overlap is there for sure, but there are interesting territories where I literally will go to something because of the things you hate.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah.
But not with food. So there you go.
No, we agree on that.
Okay. So there's hope for our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm sure I'll talk to you in the unreal world.
We'll finally get to talk like normal people because we don't do the show for a week, so we'll have to talk.
Yes, we'll have to talk like regular people. But we'll see our audience, all of you folks, in 2 weeks on December 15th for Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Give it a watch. Very excited about that.
And join us.
Anti-Christmas entertainment.
Continues. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to the Arkin Brothers Talk About Movies. That's my brother, Matthew Arkin.
And that's my brother, Anthony Arkin. And we are interesting, irreverent,
and irrelevant. But you can follow us on Instagram anyway. You can also subscribe to our newsletter and check out our merch.
And you can do it all on our website. Just follow the link on your podcast app.
Or if you really want to stalk us, head over to arkinbros.com. You'll learn more about us than anyone would ever want to know.